Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. For more than 54 years, Mimi Brodsky-Chenfeld has taught teachers, parents, and children of all ages in 46 states and many countries. Her books include Creative Experiences for Young Children, now in its third edition, and three collections, including Teaching in the Key of Life and Teaching by Heart, plus numerous articles, stories, and poems. She moved to Columbus, Ohio, lucky us, in 1970, and continues to teach at numerous schools and programs. And also here on All Sides with Ann Fisher, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann.
Nice to have you back.
Great to be back.
We were talking about what to do in the summer about a month and a half ago.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's almost over with. You know, the kids are all now in their little preschool, academic year training programs, band camps, you know, sports camps, that kind of a thing. They're pretty darn busy.
Well, most of them are. And people could be even busier with kids, even without a formalized program. You know, and just an aside, has it been a fast summer for
Is
it just me? I mean, you looked up and it was like August. No way.
Been fast for me since the fifth grade. So...
Okay, we should get feedback from listeners. Has it been just us or is it everyone? But, you know, the kids in this area, we're very lucky, Ann, because there were camps for everything. I mean, the specialty camps nowadays, in the old days you went to camp and you kind of did everything. There was no specialty camp. I don't ever remember that, you know, when the kids were younger. But now you have basketball camp and football camp and soccer camp and piano camp. So, I mean, it's getting really, really specialized. But that doesn't mean that you have to pick one for a kid. You know, there's a lot of other opportunities. The Parks and Rec agencies in this city are fabulous. You know, I just found out about a camp this week that I didn't even know. The Parks and Recreation Department's bought Smith Farms.
Oh.
And I didn't know this, and somebody who may be listening might call in, but they ran and they're running a camp. I think it's called Arts Getaway, or, you know, it's an arts camp for kids under in the Smith Barn.
Where is that?
It's out in the country, a little teeny bit out, just east. I think it's east. But the kids on my street were showing me what they did, and they were beautiful projects, and the kids' eyes were lit up, and they looked like the neon glowing, you know, advertisements for such a program. They love it.
You know, even with the specialty camps, it's not as though if you're going to a music camp, you're playing music 8 hours a day. Uh-huh. There's a lot more. There's team building, and there's fun things that they do. It's just not strictly basketball all day.
Oh, I didn't mean, you know.
No, I know you
didn't mean to connote that. But but the fact is that we have choices now of that kind of a program for kids that we, you know, 25, 30 years ago, people didn't have those choices. Just like 35 years ago, we weren't driving children around to colleges to look at, and this is like a tour. Every parent I know who's got an 18, 17-year-old is like on a tour somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm looking at colleges. I said, all we did is say, there's OSU. You go. Shut up. And I wouldn't even dream of it. We're terrible parents.
Yeah.
You know? And this generation, my generation, it was something that we, you know, my kids will say, we were deprived kids, Mom. You know, you just shoved us up High Street.
My parents planned a trip for my first day of college. They didn't even drive me to college.
Yeah, that was total benign neglect. Nothing. You'll accomplish nothing in your life, Ann, because of that experience.
It's all their fault, too.
In your biography, you can blame them for everything.
It is funny, though, because my mom showed up a couple weeks later and said, where are your dresses? I said, what do I need a dress for? She goes, for Rush. I said, Rush what? She had not talked to me about sororities.
You were better off.
Way too late. Way too late for that. You know, we had a, not long after I posted on Facebook, I think, that we were going to have you on today, I received a question from somebody. I think it was an email.
You received an oil mail?
An oil mail.
Oy.
From Doug. And I thought this must be important to him, so I'm going to just spit it out right now. He wants to know what your opinion is of No Child Left Behind and President Obama's race to the top. He says it seems like It's just more reliance on standardized testing and punishing teachers and will result in privatizing public education. Now, that's a big, huge leap. But what do you think? There's no child left behind. And then now there's the race to the top.
Doug, if you've heard the program in the past few years, you probably know already how
already
I feel.
Already know, right.
And as I was – this is so irreverent. I think I'm an irreverent reverend person. Mm-hmm. Listening to Anne is in the 10, 11 hour discussing manure with the agricultural. This is really bad. Yeah. This could be my last program with you guys. So everybody
Never.
Call in and sing We Are Family or something. But listening to the program about how they're handling the challenge about manure, all I could think of was the manure in education.
Yeah.
And to answer your question, I have written continuously to the president, and I wrote to our previous president about, you know, people can have the best intentions in the world, the best. And we were just talking about this, about parents who really want the best for their kids, but pushing and advocate for developmentally inappropriate practices that really are not good for the kids. I do believe we're in an era that is really detrimental to quality education and opening opportunities for all children and being fair to teachers and giving and encouraging them with a climate that says, do your best, use what you know, look at all the children, see what they need as against a standardized, formulated way of teaching. I am so against it. And testing as the only measurement of a child's success is so limited, and it's so unfair to so many children who absolutely do not test well, know a lot, are very, very bright, don't test well. And then to blame a teacher for children's not testing well when many of the children come in at a grade level or two or three levels below in what they know and what they achieve. And if they even advance a year, they just make up a year, that which is wonderful progress. It's still below what the standards are, and so the teacher can be considered a failure. I think they're trying to do a little bit with that. They kind of tweak that. But you're right. You're absolutely right. But, you know, they have to hear from people, too, because legislators and governments decide what happens to children. I mean, I don't think they've ever seen a kid. If a child walked into one of those Senate or, you know, congressional or, you know, state or, you know, and just sat there with his or her little eyes on them, I don't think they could pass the kinds of things they're passing. I really don't.
You know, the attitude toward teachers, now not everybody shares this, but we hear it a lot. I mean, it's a lot of the same sort of negative attitudes and stereotypes as people have about lawyers or journalists or, you know, pick your profession. But people get really down on teachers, and they're really down on them for having extra, you know, having six weeks off in the summer.
I hardly know a teacher who has 6 weeks off. I have two more classes this week. I had a class at Columbus State, and I had a class at Audubon. So that's three different, you know, colleges, universities, community colleges, just this summer, of mostly only in-service teachers coming to. Teachers are in school almost all summer, or if they're not, they're working.
And they have to be to get more
pay. Oh, they've got to
get
re-licensed to keep their license to go to the next step.
But where do you think that came from?
Well, you know what? I really, and this is many years I'm in education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think, and I may be wrong. By the way, I hope I answered Doug. I mean, Doug, from the way you ask the question, I know how you feel. And I absolutely agree. I can hear it in the way you, because that's why I said, oi, male, oi. Because it's truly a very sad situation, and teachers are caught in it, and children. And we're pushing young children into academic levels that were, you know, 2 years ahead of them. We have kindergarten kids on first grade and second grade levels of curriculum. It's absurd. It's absurd. We are in a very, I say, take the word fundamental and take the first syllable, which is what? Fun. And take it away. And what do we get? Demental. So I think literally we are in a very demental time of education. And it's the good teachers, that's why I work with teachers so much, to strengthen them so that they, you know, feel strong enough in what they know and what they believe, that no matter how manure filled the situation is, they find ways to connect with those children in creative and meaningful and joyful ways, or we turn the kids off. Now, it doesn't mean this isn't happening. All through the country, you have creative, excellent, courageous teachers who are making it meaningful, and kids want to go to school. But we have too many instances of this pressurized, standardized, you know, test-driven way of learning that is joyless. It's joyless, and it has limited outcome as far as meaningful estimation and assessment of the children. You can't estimate what they know when you only have the score.
Has there ever been a good time for education in this country?
Caves.
You know, I was listening to Jane Goodall on BBC this morning, and she was talking about what she learned from, you know, the apes and what she learned from living out in nature for so long. And she brought up a point that you often do, that we're just so divorced, particularly children, from their natural environment, that those simple lessons that you learn every day and you take for granted when you do live in your natural environment are lost.
You know,
it can't be replicated in a museum.
Well, this is such an issue now, and it's a theme in all through the country, which is bringing back a connection with nature and the environment. And this to me is, you know, it's, I'm into this, duh, you know, where nature is a really wonderful way for children to learn. Duh. Why did we get so far away? Why are we so? Because we detach everything. We separate. You know, old cultures bring everything together. They connect. So I just had this class at Columbus State called Playing with the Arts, and using the arts to be part of everything. And we talked about that. There are cultures that don't even have a word for art, because art is part of everything.
Oh, okay.
It isn't like art is there and nature is there and seasons are there and colors are here. You know, it's just art is part of everything. And as you say, nature, it isn't like nature should be a theme. It should be part of the air you breathe and awareness of, you know, we do Earth Day. We're good at like Earth Day, Brotherhood Week.
Grandparents' Day.
Yeah, Grandparents' Day, you know, right. The word for this week is respect. Our theme word for this week is respect. But if you miss school this week, you don't have to be respectful, you know what I mean? Forget it, you missed respect. Oh, I flunked respect. Yeah. So, I mean, we have this, like, way of, you know, thinking of how we teach that's all isolated. Oh, I finished cooperation. We finished cooperation. I'm going to be a little shtunk, you know. Give me that back and I don't share. Because cooperation's over. I got an A on my cooperation test. You see what I'm saying by manure?
We have to take a break. And then when we get back, we have much more of Mimi Chenfeld.
Too much.
No, and we have questions and comments coming your way. So if you'd like to question or comment, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And yes, ma'am?
Am I still on?
Yeah.
Oh, let's mention the libraries when we come back.
Oh, absolutely. We're going to talk about your 16th library program for kids you just completed. So definitely we will talk about that. If you want to talk about something, like I said, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and talk to us there. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News. When you don't have time to catch the whole story, get the update with the WOSU Daily News Loop. Receive award-winning local coverage and NPR headlines emailed every weekday right to your inbox. Catch up on current events or listen to a story you missed. Don't miss a beat with the WOSU Daily News Loop. To sign up, go to WOSU.org/email. And it's 81 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:21 this morning, sunshine this afternoon, and a high of 88 degrees. Clear skies tonight and a low right around 70 for tonight. Mostly sunny for Tuesday and another warm day with a high of 92. There's also a slight chance of afternoon showers and thunderstorms for Tuesday. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us, and good morning.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest this hour, Mimi Chenfeld. Teacher, writer, poet, dancer, author of many books on the creative education of children, and a frequent guest on the show because she makes me happy. We have a call right now. If you'd like to give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Mimi, don't let me forget the library program. Bill, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Just had a quick question. Would you agree that some teachers aren't so good and some teachers are really great? And if you don't agree with standardized testing, then how do you propose you tell who are the good teachers and who aren't? And I'll take the answer off here.
Okay. Thanks, Bill.
Bill, that's a wonderful question. The standardized testing really doesn't – I mean, the intention was, you know, to assess the children. The original intention of those tests, if we go back to them, when they first were introduced, was to see where children needed help or intervention. That was a real beginning. You know, like, here are the children. Johnny really needs help in math. He's okay in language. He's okay in reading. So that was the intention. And then it became a be-all and end-all. So, you know, that became their grade or their mark, their statistic became the measurement of their learning and their achievement, and you know, and it was never an intervention-y kind of help that was originally designed. How do we decide if teachers are good or not? And this is a very, you know, it's almost like art. I mean, teaching, it's not just a mechanical thing. Teaching is, I believe, an art. And I truly, if you really want me to get emotional about it, I really think teaching is a calling almost as sacred as a religious calling. And this is serious. Because the really wonderful teachers, it is a commitment. It is a calling, and they have no choice but to do what they do because they, you know, they could have an easier life not teaching, you know, retail or selling or whatever, much easier, because the pressures and the demands and as Anne described before, the stereotypes, you know, blasting. And I do want to add on to the answer I started to give you, but I interrupted myself as usual. I forgot my riddle in this morning. I'm just totally ADD. anyway, how do we tell? There are a lot of ways to tell, and they're not as easy as just a mark on a paper. And because that's just easy, you know. The kids all got raised in reading, you're a good teacher. The kids didn't, you're not a good teacher. Or the kids didn't get raised enough to meet the standards, you're a great teacher, but the kids only made a year's progress, you're a crappy teacher, and we're going to transfer you. So that gets into that. And then it gets into, this is just the other part of it. A teacher has children from different language backgrounds, different cultural, different economic, different families coming in. They're coming in with all kinds of individual situations that maybe individualized tests, individualized evaluations and approaches to them, because one child may respond because of multiple intelligences. Like, I respond to listening. I'm a person who likes to – I have to manipulate things. This is how I learn, but we're not going to have time to do that. We're only going to give you one way of learning. You don't learn that way. You're dumb. So teachers have a variety of children with diverse challenges in one room. And so just to try to meet those challenges in a meaningful way is a very – you know, it's an awesome situation for anyone, especially people out of the schools who say teachers have it easy. You know, just go in for one day or 2 days and see the kinds of dynamics going on in one classroom for one day, and I think people would change their minds. However, how do we handle? So
there's a bad apple in every barrel. That's
exactly.
We know
so
there
we
is.
See the teachers who create an environment where children feel safe, with this joyfulness, with this creative learning, with this cooperation, the children's works, not just the tests, but the room is full of their works, their projects. They're excited. They're coming to school. They're learning. They're connecting ideas. They can speak to you. A visitor comes in or a supervisor comes in. There's no fear. We share. We're telling you what we're doing. We understand what's happening. We can't wait for our project. We can't wait to go on with what we were doing before you came in to interrupt us because we're so involved. And we're interacting. So there's so many things in great practices that you see a teacher do. If you see a teacher reading, you know, from a script and the kids lying on their tables sleeping in a high school, you know, which I've seen many a time, I would say no matter what they're reading, they could be reading, the Declaration of Independence or the Ten Commandments. Those kids are sleeping. That's not a good teacher. But if you go in and there's interaction, there's discussion, there's excitement, or there's kids working together on a project, very involved. I mean, you see good education and you see good teaching, but it's not all a formula. One teacher may be a very quiet, soft-spoken, very organized, very literal teacher who has those kids in the palm of her or his hands. And another teacher may be a kind of wild, fun, and exuberant, you know, arts-filled, movement-filled. So you see such a variety of teachers that you can't have one description that fits all. It doesn't.
So what about...
Does that help?
That helps me. I mean, there is no one-size-fits-all.
Or did I put Bill to sleep?
It's a very in other words, it's very difficult to determine that. Now, but we all know... It's not so much a bad teacher, but there was a teacher.
There are teachers who should listen.
There are people who are mean.
And I want to tell you something, Ann, and I'm this is right bottom line. Mm-hmm. There are people who should not be in there working with kids. They do not love kids. They do not adore kids. They do not even, some of them, like kids. They're not in love with the teaching. They shouldn't be there. They should be somewhere else because they're hurting and harming not only their own lives but the lives of the children. That's bottom line. I've said that I was down in, can't think whether it was, I think it was Dayton, and talking to all the education majors. And I literally looked them in the eye and said, you're starting a study of education to be teachers. Right now you can just look in the mirror, look in your heart. If you do not really love kids, if you do not care about kids, if you're going to stay awake thinking of kids and Saturdays find something for that kid and Sundays dream about those kids, if you are not really feeling that calling right now, think about not going into this field. That's how. So the bad, to quote, bad teachers, I hate to say bad, but teachers who shouldn't be in that classroom, mm-hmm. I do believe are teachers who are not connected to the kids. Because, as you say, mean, some kids have a mean life. The only place where they can possibly have something safe and welcoming and honoring is a school. That's why teachers are so important. Because we say family, there's no more important than family. There's nothing more important. But there are kids who don't come from families that are there for them. Mm-hmm. Do we like this? No, but this is a fact. You have got to say, here are my kids. They're coming to me. In this room, you are safe at any speed. In this room, you are going to succeed. In this room, you're going to learn. In this room, you're going to feel joyfulness. And I can't do anything about what's going on out there. But here, this is a city of refuge. And those are the good teachers. Because if the kids feel that way, they can learn anything.
Don't you just love being in a classroom?
Honey, it's my life.
You don't smell chalk anymore, though.
Yeah, you do. You still smell. You smell a lot.
Smell.
Smell a lot of manure, but you also smell. There's still chalk.
Is there
smell.
Still chalk because
yes.
They have those big fancy electronic boards now?
Yes, they have all that, but they still have
dry erase,
and they still have good old schools everywhere.
They're renovating them.
Yeah, but a lot of the old schools still have the old smells.
Yeah, with the old wooden
the
floors,
old gym and the floors.
And,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, let me talk about the libraries.
Okay. All right. You just finished your 16th library program for kids. So tell us.
Well, what I want to talk about is not me necessarily, but I know. First of all, I hope everyone who's listening knows that our library system in Columbus and in this county mm-hmm. has been awarded the number one library system of its kind in of a city this size in the country. So that number one is the number one library for a city this size. The programs that this library has sponsored for children, I've been in the program 10 years, or maybe 12. Many people don't know, but many people do know. 1 year we had 90,000 kids registered, one summer.
Wow.
Okay, I think this year it's almost 70,000, some library information.
They cut back hours and
they
things
come
like
back.
That.
Well,
they had to.
They cut back, but they still have the program where kids can register, right. All ages, and now they've had adults, and they have programs for them. They have readings for them. They are welcoming of the children. Admit children help. If you go to any library, the middle school kids are your helpers. There are people who drop children off in the morning, and they stay in the library all day because it's a safe place. The librarians staff, the library staff have. Library staff has.
Mm-hmm.
Has. Thank you. Thank you, Ann.
I was going to let
your
you
fellow
know.
Journalist, you're a
it's
journalist. We don't use that. That's tense. But the library staff has been uniformly incredible across the board. Because they said, we're not trained to deal with taking care of kids. We're not trained to have children all day. They have made those experiences fabulous for the kids. You know, there's a library levy going on this year, and if we don't pass it, I mean, I don't even want to ever talk to anyone in Columbus again if you don't pass the library levy, because that library is a lifeline, lifeline for children.
We were talking last year about the major cutbacks that libraries faced and had to absorb, and all of a sudden there was a flurry of levies around the country, around the state, libraries that had never had to ask for a levy before. New experience.
Because we took for granted that the library is part of a community. But the library's become more than what the traditional place in a community. The library's become like a center. The library, I think, is like the new community center. Kids go there to do employment thing. They go to do resumes. People come to do research on a new career. They have career counseling. I mean, when you go into – so I've been in 16 libraries this summer. I was very lucky to, you know, have that chance. Every single one has its own uniqueness but has its own universality, because every one of them has had welcoming, wonderful staff – and helpful and useful and practical people of all ages. The main library is like Grand Central Station. It's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
If people haven't been to one of our libraries lately, go in. Now, the children's programs are over. They ended in July. And if you would have gone into any one of them, the magicians, and they had folk singers, and they had the turtle
lady.
What
do you do when you?
Well, I have a funny thing, because everything I do is completely integrated. It's completely connected. So if, you know, you can't say, does she do stories? Yes. But does she dance? Yes. Does she laugh? Yes. So I never want to say a label. So the first few years, I forgot what we said, just integrated, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. because I have to give it a title. So 1 year, I can't remember which library it was, but they must have put down Mimi Chenfeld Storyteller, and we were kind of dancing at that moment. This father with a stroller comes right up to me, and he says, very upset, excuse me, I thought you were a storyteller. And I was like, oh my, OMG, what is this about? I mean, why? So I said he left because we were dancing and not because we were dancing a story.
Uh-huh.
But that dancing is there, story is there, literature is there, language is there, reading is there, science is there. I mean, it's absolutely absurd to isolate everything. So I called down to Karen at the library. I said, Karen, I'm not. Don't let anyone say anything I'm doing, because you have people who get PO'd if you're not doing what
just
they
don't tell don't. Them what you're doing.
So then a child wrote me this note that said, Mimi, you're the queen of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, just say hanging out with the queen of fun. So then that was my title. And so last year in Reynoldsburg, last year, it was in my notes, we had a big crowd at the library for the program. And this, in the middle of everything, this little tiny girl tugs on my shirt and goes, Mimi, "Are you the queen?" She was so upset. She was looking for a queen. And she finally figured the one with the biggest mouth had to be the queen. She was, "Are you the queen?" So I'm like, "Oh, OMG, not again." So now I think we're just going to say hanging out. So that's what I do with the kids. We kind of do a big blob of music, dance, story, poetry, laughter, playfulness, you know, in a big wad and throw it at the kids.
You know, I was reading a blog posting of yours from the time of the last Columbus Arts Festival.
And I don't have a blog, you know.
Well, it was a posting somewhere.
Oh, somebody posted.
I think you posted on the Columbus Arts Festival's website or something. You wrote an essay about somebody came up to you and they said about your dancing, because you were dancing with different organizations.
Oh, yeah. That's a great story.
Yeah.
Should I tell that?
Yeah, because you reminded me of it when you told me about this fellow. You know, we're going to be taking a break in a few minutes, so maybe we'll wait until after we get back. But you were telling me when you were talking about this fellow walking up to you with the stroller.
Because people are so limited. People are in their little boxes, you know.
But they actually say something to you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he left. Because he thought they were going to sit down and hear a story. Mm-hmm. I do sit down. I'm too hyper. I mean, I can hardly sit here with you.
I
mean, I'm not a sit down person. You know, we were at Schiller Park last night, and they did this fabulous program, Back to the Garden.
I heard about
with
that.
Shadow Box Players.
That.
It's if anybody, they're reviving that. And if you've never seen the Shadow Box Players do Back to the Garden, it's based on Woodstock. Woodstock.
Mm-hmm.
Who is that little? Who's the little bird in
Tweety?
No, it's Wood. He has a name. Wood.
Oh, yeah, right. Woodstock and Snoopy.
Woodstock. That's what I was thinking.
Woodstock and Snoopy. It's Charlie Brown.
I don't know.
Peanuts.
Right. Yeah, we don't know our cartoon characters. Really illiterate about cartoon characters.
Well, let's get to that story when we return from the break.
Okay.
About the lady who has a problem with Mimi Chenfeld dancing.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll do that when we get back. We have a few emails as well. We'll get to those. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, if you'd like to speak with Mimi. And you can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. And I can see one of those messages is actually a Facebook message. We will get to that. You can go to our Facebook page, All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, if you want to do it that way. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, writer Gary Steingart's new novel is a romance set in a future New York City where America is in chaos. We're at war with Venezuela, corporations have merged beyond recognition, and armies of the poor have taken over Central Park. The book is called Super Sad True Love Story. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Developed by WOSU Public Media and the Columbus Metropolitan Library, ColumbusNeighborhoods.org features more than 30 neighborhoods in and around the city. It allows users to tell their own stories, post their own photos and video, and contribute to the collective story of Columbus. To be a part of this multimedia public engagement project or to learn more, visit ColumbusNeighborhoods.org.
Support for WOSU comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at TheOtherPaper.com.
82 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:40 this morning, sunshine today, and an afternoon high of 88 degrees. Clear skies tonight, a low of 70 degrees. Another warm day for Tuesday, mostly sunny and a high of 92. There's also a chance of afternoon rain for Tuesday. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Mimi Brodsky-Chenfeld. Her books include Creative Experiences for Young Children, Now in its third edition and three collections, including Teaching in the Key of Life and Teaching by Heart, plus many, many articles, stories, and poems. And one of the essays that I read that you wrote last June, right around the Columbus Arts Festival time for their website, I think, was about some lady who has a problem with your dancing. And when you're not the queen of fun, you're the queen of dance.
Well, you know, I totally forgot that I wrote that little piece for the Arts Council because they said, could I write a little piece? And I completely forgot until you mentioned it that I wrote it, you know, that I wrote it for them. And I forgot what I had written. But the story is a fabulous story. So many of you know that the Labor Day, they have the Greek festival and they have the powwow, the Native American powwow. And I've been going to powwows for about 50 years. And so, you know. Jewish American Indian, anyway, and the Greek festival. I just love the Greek, the Kakis band, phenomenal musicians and the dance. So anyway, so I was, you know, go to both. So I'm at the Greek festival dancing on the Saturday night, dancing till it's over. And then the next day I'm at the powwow. And in the powwow, you can, when they say intertribal, anyone can dance in this dance circle.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes they're more specific and there's different kinds of dances. But when they say intertribal, everyone's welcome. So I always dance intertribal because we're one of the tribes anyway. So I'm dancing there. And then people who don't dance are on the outside of the circle, around the circumference, and chairs are watching. So as I came out of the circle, this woman was beckoning to me. And without my glasses, I thought somebody I knew. So I cheerily walked over to her and said hi. And she wasn't smiling. She was grimacing at me. And I'm like, oh. She said, didn't I see you dancing at the Greek festival last night? I said, yes, you did. And then she said, and now you're dancing at the powwow? I said, yes, I am. And I mean, this is no lie. She looked at me and she said, what are you anyway? And I was so shocked.
A dancer?
I said, I guess I'm just a festival girl. True story.
Well, she was at both festivals, so she's...
That's right, but I was dancing.
Yeah.
She attended them. I guess that gave you more freedom to just do a smorgasbord, but... But
did you start laughing?
I was hysterical.
Yeah.
I thought it was the funniest.
And she was all bent out.
What are you anyway? And it was a great way, you know, to lead into a lot of issues on multiculturalism and who are you and et cetera. Creativity. If you want to try this, try this. If you don't want to try that, don't try that. You know, freedom of choice. It was fun. It was a fun story.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we have a message from Randy on Facebook. Do you think there's any connection between helicopter parents and all the opportunities that kids have nowadays? And Mimi, we were talking, you're not sure what a helicopter parent is, but I think it's somebody who just is constantly involved in their kid's life.
Why would they call that a helicopter?
Randy, they're hovering.
Why can't you call
they kind of
us?
Hover. They hover.
Oh, hover.
I think that's it. Randy, let us know if I'm incorrect.
Randy, why don't you call just your beautiful voice and not Twitter quack, chirp, Facebook. I mean,
I like Facebook, Randy, but that you can call too. We'd love to hear from your voice too.
So you mean hovering? So what's the
parents
choice?
Parents are futzing over their kids all the time, Well, she wonders what the connection between that is and all the opportunities that kids have nowadays. So if there's a...
Are you saying they have more opportunities that they don't follow because parents are hovering over them or parents hovering, pushing them into those opportunities?
Yeah.
So I've never really heard the term helicopter parents. It's a really interesting term. But
they have a call coming in.
Is she twittering you? Or
no, it's Tim.
Is she calling? Oinking you back
Twittering? Let's see if Randy can clarify the term helicopter parents for us. Hopefully she can. But my producer, Amy Jurovich, is looking it up. I think it's like parents who hover, but I might be wrong about that.
Yeah. It fits. It fits. But Randy will wait till we find out if that's what it means.
Until we know. Well, in the meantime, we do have a call from Tim.
Hi, Tim.
So, Tim's not on the air yet.
Don't let that stop me.
Tim, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Thank you.
Hi, Tim.
Great show.
Thank you. It might be my last show,
no,
Tim.
No.
I enjoyed the story of the Greek festival. What are you anyway? I can relate to that. My dad was German, and my mom's from Spain, and I grew up in Europe, and then I grew up in Panama. And I came to Ohio State, and I've lived here since I was basically 18. So I've lived here the majority of my life. But that question gets asked to me quite often, what really are you? And the great thing about Columbus and the reason why I stayed after I graduated was there are so many people here who are from different parts of the world. And my experience has been nobody really cares where you're from. In Columbus, Ohio, unless you live in Bexley, they really don't care.
I live in Berwick.
Okay.
Oh, well, you know, in Bexley, everybody knows which house they lived in what family, and, it's a very tight community. Mm-hmm. I married a local girl from Bexley. That's the only reason I say that. And in New Albany or in Dublin or anywhere else, they just, they accept you the fact that you bring something new to the culture. Now the Latin festival is coming up. I wanted to know if you were going to go out and do a little dancing with the Latino community.
Oh, Tim, when is the Latin festival?
It's this the 14th through the weekend, the 13th, 14th, 15th.
Miss a festival.
Well, there'll be a lot of dancing. We have friends that are from Puerto Rico, and they have a band. I just wondered if you wanted to join them. I can invite you.
What's the name of the band, Tim?
The name of the band, I really don't know the name of the band. It's a folkloric band from Puerto Rico, and it's like the Von Trapps from Puerto Rico. The father plays the instrument, the mother sings, and the girls dances. And but anyway, it's
Tim, where will it be? Tell everyone.
Bicentennial Park, I believe it is every year. Uh-huh. And it brings in cultures. You know, when you say, where are you from, everybody assumes if you speak Spanish, you must be Mexican. Uh-huh. But, you know, in my case, I lived in different places in South America. And South Americans can be European, blonde, blue-eyed, or they can be native to their country, Indians, or they can be a mix. Uh-huh. But they bring with them their culture, their music, their food. Just like the Greek festival, which my mom is from Spain, and her culture is very similar to the Greeks, the Mediterranean food. So there'll be that type of food, but there'll also be Mexican food, and there'll be South American food. And
always love the food. I love the music too, but the food, you're getting me with the food.
Glad you brought this up, because we were talking about opportunities for children and families. And when you see children at these events, they have the best time. I teach every summer at Otterbein College called Arts Across the Curriculum, and this is in the summer. One of my first assignments to the class is go to a festival and watch the children and come back and say what you saw. Because we already know what you're going to see. They're going to be dancing, and they're going to be at the face paint, and they're going to be at the balloon people. Wherever something is happening that's colorful or fun or hands-on or musical or movement, that's playful, that's where the children are going to be. And they're going to be as free-spirited, the most free-spirited people at the festival. The little ones are going to dance and clap and want to join in. So I'm glad you added a festival to my list.
One more, right?
Tim. You can't have enough. You can't have enough.
Thank you, Tim.
Well, thank you for your show.
Take care.
Thanks, hon.
614-292-8513. And Dawn, you're on the air. Do you know what a helicopter parent is?
Yeah, the first time I heard that term was on NPR on one of the national programs. And then I heard it on several talk shows and saw it in some magazines, that a helicopter parent is, like you were saying, a parent that hovers. But it has a negative connotation in that you plan, it's a parent that are very involved in their kids' life, which is great, like parents should be, but they hover so much and plan their kids so much. You know, the whole play date thing, the whole plan every activity in the summer, every camp, nothing is just spontaneous. That when I have seen it is at the university level, they refer to helicopter parents as the parents who call when their child flunks the test and is upset with the professor, and calls when the child has a problem, problems that by the time you're in college, that's part of your developmental learning process, is how to figure out how to deal with teachers and professors and other students that are young adults, too. So the helicopter parent is the parent that hovers, but kind of stifles the child's development in that the child doesn't, can't do anything on their own. You know, they're just, they're so reliant on their parents. Like my friend who's a professor at OSU talks about her students whose parents called them every morning. That's their alarm clock. So that would be an example of a helicopter parent.
Okay.
They're hovering. So it's a negative connotation.
You
so
really
that's
just
what he was talking about. With those activities, being having so many activities, does that contribute to this whole concept?
So,
but yeah, I'm
oh,
sure you can
okay.
look it up online, and it will pop up because journalists have written about it and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah,
Dawn, you really described it very well.
Yeah,
very well. And you know, I think you know this is going back to either or. You know, do we need to vote on? I mean, if definitely we should be involved in our children's lives. We definitely, but to know enough that they need time to just be kids on their own and be self-initiating and make their own choices. And that's hard for some folks to let go of time that's just free time for children. And sometimes that's the best time. That's the best time for them. And, you know, this is going back. It's a kind of a parallel, but it's not quite. But, you know, the Smithsonian last year or two years, accepted a box as part of their play exhibit of children's play.
Just a cardboard box.
Because, you know, we're always thinking they've got to have what's in the box. You've got to have the latest this, the most electronic that.
No, just buy a washer and dryer.
The best. But most kids will love just playing with the box. But, mm-hmm. So this is going back to the free time. You know, we think we have to fill their time every minute with something that's programmed and preset. And we're doing it for them. You know, ballet. You know, the kid is not even two. She's still in Pampers, but she's got a tutu. And she's got tickets for her first recital. You know, people say to me, my child started ballet. And they said, and we have 10 tickets we've got to sell for the recital. She just learned to walk. I mean, and she's still in Pampers. You know, I'm not saying Ballet Med because they have the greatest children's, you know, program you could get in the country, but there are a lot of, you know, pushing. Here we go. We're planning. We're programming. We're rehearsing. And so that time is just dwindling away for free time for the children. There's nothing left for them, as you said, to play on their own, to find out on their own, to problem solve. So my answer to Randy, it won't be an answer, it would be a response, would be, you need to hover a little bit because you're still there and you're present and you're caring and you love them. But then you've got to have the sense and sensibility to let go and let them have time on their own and make some decisions that may even not be the greatest decisions. But if they've never done it, as you said, when they get to college or get to adulthood, they're like incapable of being on their own, being their individual people with courage and openness and willingness to risk and intelligence to solve problems.
Dawn,
thank you for the call,
hon.
Thank you.
We have a few more minutes left. Randy did follow up with us. She's apparently out of the state and listening online. Thank you for listening online, Randy. Helicopter parents refers to those parents who call teachers to ask why their child received a B rather than an A. Same thing that Don was talking about. We have another Facebook comment from Sean, who agrees. We got helicopter right. It's hovering parents. Would love to hear some opinions on the impact of the single parent situation on education. As a youth scout leader and sometimes coach, I'm finding lots of kids with very basic skills missing because the father is absent.
Well, this is not just father absent. I would just say we've just had a whole day of this with teachers in one of my sessions. I mean, we have children with, you know, being brought up by grandparents. We have children who go from house to house, you know, Monday and Tuesday I'm here and Wednesday and Thursday. We have children of same-sex parents, you know, two moms or two dads or living with an uncle. I mean, we have children from every variety of family configuration that is that you can even imagine. So, I mean, if you have a single mom, I mean, not just fathers missing, but I mean just people missing from their lives or a configuration that's very unfamiliar to most other people so that they have that kind of stigma or they have that relationship to work through in the community, unless it's a teacher who says, in this place you're safe, or however you live, whatever your family is, it's okay, mm-hmm. we're with you. I mean, that's what we were talking about before. I would say that because of the description you gave, Sean, is that Sean? Mm-hmm. And what I added to it, single parents plus multiple foster mom, stepdad, uncle, grandmas, two moms, two dads, it's no moms, no dads, nobody, neighbor. I mean, because of all these things going on, this is what's happening in our schools all over the country. And these are challenges that have these effects, as you say, of, you know, what effects on education. Because the old way of saying that, when you go home, your parents will help you work this out. When you go home, if you have a problem with this project, you ask your parents, or have mom sign this. I don't have a mom home. So right off the bat, there are kids just emotionally, unless you make it an inclusive way of communicating with the children so that whatever you say to them is relevant to them. And no, because you can't believe we just had this deepest, longest session about this, because teachers right now have to face a language problem. How do we help a child who's got just one mom at home and nobody else? How do we help a child who has no mom at home? And how do we make it, you know, okay for the other children not to in any way put them down or in any way, you know, leave them say you're different?
I think that can be a problem.
It's a language
sports,
problem.
Particularly in language, too.
And to say, you know, we need your parents' permission for you to go on this trip. I don't have parents. Or my dad is in Arizona and my mom is working all day and my babysitter leaves at 6 and leaves me supper until my mom gets home. We have kids. And then this is going back to teachers. And they're getting judged by a score for these kids, and that's a score that were their failures or success. So I say to teachers, the minute you say to some children in a classroom, have your mom sign this before you come in tomorrow, so you can go on the trip, that you might have 50% of those kids cut off right then. And they won't tell
and
you.
And the other 50% won't bring it home anyways.
Oh, yeah, they'll forget it anyway. So, very good point. Even with mom there, present, absent. So I do think it has an effect on education, effect on how children learn, and effect on how children are wanting to learn and wanting, because if there's nobody at home that's really encouraging or really motivating and helping that kid of any age, I mean, we have a lot of high school kids. Nobody. I have high school teachers who say at parent conferences, one parent came in. Mm-hmm. And then I have the best. A teacher said she had the worst thing ever happened to her. She fell asleep during a parent conference. She fell, the
oh
teacher.
My gosh.
She dozed off. It was one-to-one.
Oh, my gosh.
And the parent was so upset, she went into the principal and said that was the most disgraceful thing. And the principal was a wonderful principal who said, well, I guess everything must be okay, because if it wasn't, she would have fallen asleep.
Wow. That's all the time we have.
Oh, time flies when we're having fun.
It sure does. Thank you so much for coming
Thanks,
back.
Anne.
And you will be back
again.
Oh,
thank you, sweetie. And have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.